I had a business where I wanted to remodel Victorian homes. And so I bought an old Victorian in Durango, Colorado. And while remodeling that, I wound up having a floor blow up when I was using lacquer thinner, refinishing a hardwood floor. And, you know, poof, in the flash of an eye, my whole life changed as I was severely burned, over 80% of my body. That began a whole another chapter in my life where I went from being so independent and so physically capable and invincible, like so many of us are when we're in our 20s, or think we are, and to where I was completely dependent upon the care of others. I was hospitalized for over 7 months, and it started weighing on my heart. At first, I was just filled with self-pity and, my own dealing with myself. But as I could begin to look at the world around me, I started realizing people really do need care at different stages of life. And it was just kind of amazing to be, I guess that's where the seed for this business really got planted that much deeper.
Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show, the podcast designed to learn from the successes and the failures of small businesses making an impact. My name is Seth Silvers, and after 4 years of helping small businesses learn to market with stories, I've learned that someone might be selling something similar to you, but nobody, absolutely no one, can compete with your stories. This show is dedicated to diving into the one thing that makes every small business unique, their story, and learning from the good and the hard parts. If you see business as a tool for good, and you want to learn from others who believe the same, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show. Have you ever realized that your life could completely change in the blink of an eye? I truly don't wonder this enough, to be honest. I'm 28, I have a business, I'm married, love my friends and the community I live in, and I don't realize that sometimes accidents happen and literally my whole life as I know it could completely change. And this is what happened to Aaron, our guest today, when he was in his 20s. Everything was going good for him. He had a business, was physically capable, and then boom, hospitalized for 7 months. And tasks that he always could do on his own, like eating, getting dressed, going to the bathroom, everything changed for him. Now, if you let it, I truly believe this episode will change you, because Aaron's story didn't end there. He struggled as he recovered both emotionally and physically, but he began to realize that this could be used, that his story could be used. And him being so dependent on others actually inspired him to start a business where he could care for people in society that are often not given the care that they need. So I implore you, please listen to this entire episode. And please share this with somebody that you know who will be inspired. This isn't just a good business story, it's a good human story, and I truly believe we all need to hear this story. So share this with somebody that you think would love this story. Now, let's dive into the episode. Welcome back to the Small Business Storytellers, everybody. I am thrilled to be here with Aaron Ellis. And part of the goal of this podcast has not just been to talk about business, but to really show that there's a story behind every business and there's a story behind every business owner. And those stories, they don't just shape who we are, they shape how we do business and what business we do and all of those things. And so I heard Aaron's story 3 or 4 years ago and was really, I'd say, captivated. I mean, I still remember it. I've heard a lot of things over the last 3 or 4 years, and there's a handful that really stick out. And so I wanted to bring Aaron onto the show. And so, Aaron, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks so much, Seth. I'm glad to join.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, give us some context for who you are. What is the business that you own, and what do you guys do?
Yeah, so I'm Aaron Ellis, and me and my wife, Melissa, we operate Monarch Greens Assisted Living, a home for life, where it's a residential assisted living home where we care for some of our elders in need of help with their activities of daily living. And it's just a beautiful place. It's kind of a group home. Think a little bit like the Golden Girls, but in reality, it really it makes a lot of sense to live together, do life together, age well together, and be cared for in a safe environment.
So is it kind of a middle ground between So, well, I guess it describe the difference between what you do in just assisted living where there's large buildings with hundreds of people.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's different levels of care, like independent living. A lot of people would think, well, that's like living, you know, I'm independent living right now. Well, in the terms of kind of elder care, independent living is when a person might start living in an apartment, but have access to facilities or, you know, maybe a dining area or other support services, some on-site nursing. Assisted living is a higher level of care where a person really does need some assistance with an activity of daily living, whether it's, you know, taking a shower, getting dressed, dealing with their daily hygiene, maybe ambulating, help preparing meals, things of that nature. And so that's where we come in. And what's different about residential assisted living is, and what people often think is more traditional assisted living in a facility, is pretty much size, but I think it also, that actually does matter in our world, mm-hmm. of when it comes to intimacy, relationships, connection, and feeling like home.
So when I first found out what you did and you invited me, I went over and visited the home. I had no idea that this was like a bit, I had no idea that this was a business.
Yeah.
I think we typically assume that things that care for people are charities or nonprofits, and that kind of when businesses get into the world of caring for people that it can be slimy and stuff. But this is actually a real business, and I was really impressed by that. Do you guys run into that misconception a lot, that are people, I guess, like surprised, like, oh, this whole caring for the elderly thing, like, it's a business?
Yeah, and I think probably the only thing that really differentiates us from a nonprofit, as I've operated nonprofits in the past and seen how they work, is the fact that we don't receive, we're not a 501c3, and we don't receive donations specifically for the production of what we're doing, though we've kind of considered it too. Hmm. It's not a bad option. I've met a lady recently in Denver who operates the same business model, but as a nonprofit versus a for-profit industry. And so it just has to do with how we handle our profits after, after we make them.
Right.
And second, you know, can we receive donations or whatnot? Mm-hmm. There's more administration in a nonprofit. So actually, our overhead would go up because we'd be required to have a board of directors and some other aspects of reporting. So it hasn't quite made sense for our scale yet.
I love it. And there's been a few times on this podcast where we've kind of highlighted almost what I'd call like hidden industries,
yeah.
where it's just the business where when you hear about it, you're like, oh, I never even thought about that. But they're essential industries and essential businesses to our communities. So rewind, share with us some of your story. Share with us really kind of the narrative, starting with some of the things that we started talking about before we hit record. But I'd love to know, how did you get to the place where this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I started working at one of our local nursing homes in my small hometown in Hood River, Oregon. And first off, I was kind of shocked by the way that we care for our elders. I really didn't know that many older people at that time. And it was interesting. The oldest people I knew at that time were my grandparents, who were in their 70s at that time. And it was fascinating to me then to see people in their 90s and approaching 100, and then the way that we aged, and quite frankly, the difficult circumstances under which we aged. I worked in a wing of a nursing home, kind of down that dark back hallway, and it smelled. It was difficult. Some of the people were in some really difficult circumstances. And so my heart was really moved and shocked by this. And I thought that there must be a better way of doing this. And as I went, finished through school and wound up in college in Portland, Oregon, I worked in some larger, pretty amazing facilities. Not all of them have this like back dark hall that, mm-hmm. seems kind of dingy. And there's a level of care that can, kind of hurt our hearts. But even in the larger facilities, it was still a facility, and it was still kind of this environment that I recognized there could be, there had to be something different. This didn't always feel like, even in the nicest of places, like the place that I wanted my mom to be cared for, or even my grandparents at that time. And around that time, I also worked for a lady who had a series of small homes in the suburbs of Portland. And it was fascinating, to particularly the home that she operated, where she lived in it. There was just a vibrancy and a life. There was light, there were plants, there were animals. People were, you know, were being cared for, and in, you know, like it was in their own home. And it just really kind of opened my eyes to that there was a new possibility, something that could be done differently. I was still so young at that time, I had no idea. I dreamt it might be something I'd want to do, but then life goes on, and life happened. Years later, I, in my 20s, I just finished college, and I was kind of, I'd gone after new approaches in life, new businesses. I was, you know, I was on, always entrepreneurial, and I'd had a janitorial service, and I had a business where I wanted to remodel Victorian homes. And so I bought an old Victorian in Durango, Colorado, and while remodeling that, I wound up having a floor blow up when I was using lacquer thinner, refinishing a hardwood floor. And, you know, poof, in the, you know, in the flash of an eye, my whole life changed as I was severely burned, over 80% of my body. That began a whole another chapter in my life where I went from being so independent and so physically capable and invincible, like so many of us are when we're in our 20s, or think we are, and to where I was completely dependent upon the care of others. I was hospitalized for over 7 months. And then even after, you know, leaving the hospital, I still could barely, I think I'd just begun to be able to feed myself at that time. But I mean, so over 7 months, someone was feeding me, and, you know, I could barely get a hand to my mouth. I had these like long extended, you know, pieces of silverware or whatever that I could kind of eat with. And I had a whole routine, you know, associated with my burns, of these special garments that we had to wear, you know, clothing that kind of compressed the scars. A face mask. I couldn't really go to the bathroom by myself. I certainly couldn't get dressed. I couldn't take my medications on my own. I could barely, you know, I by that point I was walking, but I was still kind of unsteady on my feet to go out and walk around the block. If the sidewalk was uneven, you know, I could be down before I knew it. And so I was very much dependent upon other people. And it started weighing on my heart. At first I was just filled with self-pity. And, you know, my own, you know, dealing with myself. But as I could begin to look at the world around me, I started realizing people really do need care at different stages of life. And it was just kind of amazing to be, I guess that's where the seed for this business really got planted that much deeper.
So, first off, incredible. Like, I think... on other episodes, we've talked about how often your passion for your business comes out of your pain or your frustrations. And I mean, the connection could not be stronger to what you went through and what you are now doing. Talk to me about what did your 30s and 40s and what did the next few decades look like for you?
Well, so I suffered a number of challenges early on in my recovery. I just wasn't, I didn't function at a high level. For a period of time, I turned to drugs and alcohol and really struggled. I actually wound up going to prison as a result of my journey just for misbehaving. I was like, I was as good of a misbehaving burn survivor as there was, as just a person who was angry at the circumstances of how life had turned out for me when I thought that there was no real hope for me. it was after that, I, you know, it was a good time out for me, a very unfortunate time out, but also a chance for me to really reflect on my own personal responsibility and my own journey in life, to learn to love myself, to forgive myself and other people who I felt had been kind of, you know, involved in this tragedy of my life. And it also kind of brought my heart back to like, how do I do something different with this life? I felt like I'd been given a second chance. I obviously didn't start very well in kind of negotiating that second chance, but how could I do something good with it? And I started volunteering with the Red Cross afterwards, and eventually wound up working for the Red Cross and began. I operated some different programs, and I really feel like, even though I didn't know God at that time in my life, in fact, I was really kind of angry at God for, you know, how could a good person like me go down, you know, have so many bad things happen in this journey. Being burned and going to prison just seemed like like, what kind of, like, it was just the worst set of circumstances I could have ever imagined for my life. And so I was angry at God for, you know, it took me a long time to kind of figure out that even there could be good that comes out of all this. And it feels like, for me, as I look back on that period of time, it almost looked as though God's hand was on my life, even though I didn't know him, and he was guiding my path, which I believe he's done my whole life, whether I was recognizing it or not. But during that time, there was certainly a time of blessings, and I advanced quickly through the organization and wound up being promoted to direct the Red Cross in Northern Colorado. In that same time frame, I met my wife, Melissa, who also is a survivor of burns and was one of the few people I've ever met who, in her 20s, actually lived in a nursing home. Interesting how God kind of weaves everything together, because not only did we know from the beginning that our lives were kind of meant for each other, we also, as we got to know each other, realized we both had a background in caregiving. And Melissa had been a caregiver working for Saskatchewan up in Canada and with the local health district, and helping with her, with you know, folks there going out and doing like home health care, helping people stay independent in their homes. And that was just really kind of amazing to both of us to realize we had that connection. And we just started dreaming about, we'd seen this, I had this this knowledge of this model in my mind. When I was directing the Red Cross here in Northern Colorado, it was one of our, an early significant donation that we received during the tornadoes and went through Windsor and other parts of Northern Colorado back in 2008, came from a lady, and I went to go visit her, and she actually lived in a home like this. Not the one that we wound up buying, but one just right around the corner from us. But it was interesting, as we went in, as I went in to visit her, I was like, okay, I remember this place, you know, from so many years before in my youth, you know, seeing the residential assisted living model here in Fort Collins, kind of, you know, just really, awakened my heart again to, like, this is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. And we not long after that made contact with the lady that owned that home, and Melissa and I just started praying and dreaming about this, and slowly over the years this lady mentored us and kind of gave us some guidance on you know, take it you know, small, take it slowly, make sure this is something you really want to do, because this really is a commitment. It may be a, like if we talked about a nonprofit versus a for-profit business, but this is a, sure, it's a for-profit business, but this is only something I think people should enter into if they kind of have a calling to it. It's very difficult and it's very challenging. It has as many obstacles to it as I could have imagined, and but I'm just really pleased with what it's turned out to be, and I'm grateful we've had this chance.
Yeah, what a story. You know, you would not have been able to give back and serve others in the way that you are now.
No.
Had you not gone through some personal healing. And I don't just mean physically, although physical was a part of it. But you talk about, you know, how you were angry, ended up going to jail, and ended up, like, having these challenges. I would think a lot of people would say, rightfully frustrated with some of the circumstances that life had thrown at you. How did you work through that? And was there a moment where things shifted for you to where you realized, I'm going to make the most of what I have?
It was a series of moments. I mean, the grief and loss process is very real in this life, and I keep seeing it come up, and it's interesting to have gone through such a significant grief and loss process of my own, but then to be helping families as they're going through grief and loss processes of their own. One thing I see for sure is, as people leave their independence and need care later in life, it's a very humbling experience. It can really be difficult, and it can really, so we see these little, anytime we go through a significant change in life, there's a mini grief and loss process attached to it. And the more significant that change, the more significant that grief and loss process is. So there wasn't necessarily a moment as much as there were a series of moments. And there was one, I had to really get past this feeling of having lost my ability to do everything. And then, you know, if you've ever come across the book, A Thousand Gifts, it's kind of this idea of of, you know, these, if we start focusing on the blessings in our lives, the one thing we can do. I didn't know what a blessing was at that point in time, but I focused on the one, you know, I was so mad about all these tools and different things I couldn't use. And to be able to focus on one tool that I could use, began this process of, okay, I can't do all these things, but I could do this one thing. Hmm. And so there was that, there was a big point in my life of going through a huge process of forgiveness. That was really significant. There was another period of of just going through the loss process, the grieving. For some reason, as a male, I thought, okay, we're supposed to like kind of bottle everything up and mm-hmm. not cry and not grieve through things. And I had a lot of losses that I had to grieve. And I went through a really kind of incredible grief process that just helped me to let go of a lot of things that for a long time were, I think they were adding to the anger. My father had also taken his life years before. That was a significant tragedy in our family that I had just, you know, kind of bottled up, hadn't dealt with. And I wonder at times even, you know, how much of my own kind of poor choices and behaviors were tied back to a grief that I hadn't processed. And so I had this period of time where prison was incredibly difficult at times. It gave me a lot of opportunity to self-reflect, to go through this grieving and to forgive and process, to learn to love myself again. So yeah, there was quite a process there, and it was amazing. Years later, to, you know, as Melissa and I connected, she also had just been through so much in her life, and, you know, before her burn and with her burn. But I watched her go through an amazing process of forgiveness too. Her burn was unfortunately the result of abuse, and as you can imagine, just the levels of anger and frustration and bitterness and unforgiveness that could come along with that. I got to watch this in her life, and I saw a person transform in front of my eyes, and I just learned that there's so much power in, I guess, these spiritual gifts of things like forgiveness, of, you know, loving ourselves, of caring for ourselves, forgiving ourselves. But and so it was just a beautiful thing that I think has helped. We're just as broken and messed up of people as it seems like we ever were, but we have come a long ways in this life that it feels like we're able to care for others.
I'm amazed at how connected people's like personal transformation is to their business transformation or their career transformation and whatnot, and how often people's personal insecurities are bleeding in, I guess, how much our internal life bleeds into the outside life.
Yes.
And whatnot. And so one thing that unfortunately people are not very good at realizing, that sometimes when people have, because of trials they've gone through, their skin might look different. Yeah. We're not good at processing that as a society. So I would love to dive in, like, how did you get to the place where you initially didn't worry about what other people thought? Because I imagine that would be a journey when, you, like you mentioned before, we were talking about this episode, how, you know, you walk into a room and sometimes it's easier to just tell them the story of what happened rather than giving them time to ask all of these questions and stuff. So what was the journey like of just, of you not wanting to hide what Aaron Ellis can give to the world?
Yeah, that was quite a process as well. I mean, because it was difficult initially. I mean, I looked really bad, though. I didn't look terribly different than I do now. I mean, because I'm doing an interview, I'm probably fairly red and pink a little bit. In some places, you can see the patterns of my burn more when I get just a little bit flushed. But I was really kind of multicolored and I stood out. But I also, what I realized over time was how much of it was about the way I was carrying myself. You know, I mean, I used to like, you know, kind of, you know, wear sunglasses and a hoodie and try and like sneak into the grocery store just to get like a gallon of milk, you know, like this basic necessity that I needed. But I think I was like even behaving in a way, like I was trying to dart in and dart out, and mm-hmm. sure enough, I'd get to the cash register, and there'd be some kid. Like, I love kids, but they're very honest. And mm-hmm. they would, you know, the kid would be like, "Mom, what's wrong with that guy?" You know, and point me out, and it seemed like the whole store would, you know, turn to see, well, what's wrong with that guy, mm-hmm. and so I was just really incapable of not drawing attention to myself or something. I mean, there was a journey that had to go on there. It came from a lot of different areas. One, beginning to appreciate scars. It took time to heal some. I think prison helped a little bit like this too. What's interesting about the culture there was that people are very much about, there's this idea of do your own number, which is like, stay yourself. You do your, you know, you don't get in other people's business. So like even the idea of like staring at somebody wasn't really appropriate in there, if that makes sense. And so they didn't. And so people just treated me like somebody else. And frankly, the whole system treated me like there was nothing wrong with me. It was kind of weird how that, it was even like the, I remember getting processed into what's called DRDC, which is where you kind of get received into the Colorado Department of Corrections. And they're being given, I mean, I couldn't button a button or tie a shoelace or do any of these things. And I remember going through, and they hand me this pile of, you know, here's a pair of like 9-hole boots and a pair of pants with buttons and a buckle. And I was trying to explain to them, you know, I can't do any of this stuff. And they're like, next. And that was just the process of what the whole system was like. It wasn't about, you know, it seems like in the world we're looking for all these accommodations for when bad things have happened to us in life, you know, and there certainly didn't seem to be any like Disabilities Act or anything like that in prison. And so I learned there, I guess it was just a period of time where I was given a break from being stared at and pointed out. But then afterwards, this whole time when this first started happening, as far as me, getting into the justice system, my family they were kind of shocked that there was this much going on with me. They knew that there was the burn, but there was all this, you know, coping side, and the mental side of healing was easily as difficult or more difficult than the physical side. And but they had reached out to an organization called the Phoenix Society, and it's a national organization for burn survivors, and started getting some resources and different things. And so I'd been getting their newsletters, and there were lots of stories in there about other survivors. I thought I had the worst thing that ever happened to anybody happened to me. And so there was this kind of period of time of seeing that, okay, I wasn't the only person that had been through this, and I was seeing other people having gone through even worse burns and worse challenges in life, and dealing with them positively. And it started giving me some hope and belief that things could be different. Hmm. I learned some little tricks about when my first year out of prison, I went to the Phoenix Society. They hold a national convention called World Burn Congress, and there I went to a speaker who had talked a lot about giving us tips on developing an elevator speech, you know, kind of how you break the ice initially, of having, you know, when people ask a question, being prepared to answer it rather than like getting all flustered and stumbling over ourselves. I mean, it's kind of the same idea in our businesses. We learn to, we try and practice how to tell our story, you know, effectively and in a way that we've already thought about rather than stumbling all over it. And when I learned that, and then it was just kind of learning, it was other like kind of strategies around like making eye contact, smiling at people, you know. So all of a sudden, I can remember an experience down in Denver, you know, early on in my kind of second chapter of my burn, of being in a grocery store and, you know, having bought some stuff and leaving. And it wasn't until I got out in the parking lot and I was like, nothing happened. Like it was like, because I was behaving differently. You know, like there were no questions. It was like I even had this like normal conversation with the guy at the cash register, and we didn't talk about my burn. It was like we just talked about the weather and everything else. And so that was kind of like this first step in, like, I was like, okay, I'm making progress. And anymore, I forget that I'm even burned. Like it hasn't even been an issue for, it seems like, more than the last decade.
Other people are probably the ones that remind you.
What's that?
Said other people might be the ones that remind you.
But. Yeah, or when I take time to look in the mirror, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I am burned.
I love that. I think that's really great, and I love how essential it seems like gratitude and forgiveness have just been so essential in your story, and I think that's powerful. Fast forwarding to like your business today, yes. where you are, you know, caring for people day in and day out. What has that experience been like for you and your wife, where, you know, you realized once you met each other, this was something you actually both had a passion for since a young age. And now you're getting to serve in something that you wanted to do in your 20s. What's it like to kind of see those dreams realized, even though the path to those was pretty different than you imagined?
Yeah, the journey of life is certainly way different than I ever could have imagined. It's far more beautiful. It's far more amazing. Like the richness of life, even through these tragedies, exceeds any expectation of what I thought the journey of life would be. You know, finding a love, you know, with my wife that I just, I mean, it blows my mind that two people who were so severely injured and had, you know, kind of fairly rough upbringings to start with, would find each other through tragedy and find a love that exceeded either their expectations. And we both, after our burns, pretty much thought, okay, love's out of the question. You know, there's not going to be any intimacy on this. You know, no one's going to love this. Mm. And instead we find something far more than that, that just blows us away. The, you know, the connection of our lives, because we see the hand of God in it all. You know, that's the beautiful part. You start seeing that God really does, he's intimate with our lives, and he weaves things together in the most intimate, extraordinary ways and fulfills our dreams, but they're not done in the ways that we're necessarily expecting. And, you know, so he began to kind of unfold this one for finally, you know, I think he used Melissa and the world around me while I was in my role at the Red Cross to finally, you know, humble me and bring me to my knees to recognize that he is my God, that Jesus is Lord. And through that, our marriage transformed, and then things started happening differently too. And we kind of began to really recognize that we wanted this gift of caring for other people to, you know, to come true in our lives. And we started, it was actually, we'd start kind of were planting the seeds. We were dreaming about it. We were writing business plans and working on how this might come together. And we started telling some friends, and a friend reached out to us, and actually it was through Facebook of all places. She had posted, I think she'd made a post about that she was looking for someone to care for her mom. And we're like, yeah, well, this is something we're thinking about. And we'd been kind of preparing, we'd been getting our house ready, and mm-hmm. we had some extra rooms. And so we started doing this. And you know, we did that for years. We literally cared for that lady for what, four years. Hmm. And before the opportunity to buy the second home came into the picture. And it, so just, we're incredibly filled with gratitude. And also we're very honored that people are trusting us, that they believe in this vision that we're going down. And that part is, you know, because think about this, we're caring for, you know, it's like caring for your mom. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to trust what we're doing and that our hearts are in the right place, and that you know, our hearts to serve are there, and that works and somehow it comes true. It's amazing. I
love that. What are some things that have been helpful for you and Melissa as business owners over the last handful of years, and just whether it's learning the skills or learning how to operate or how to grow a business? What have been some things that have been really helpful for you?
I think a background in business helps. I highly encourage a business degree. It really does, you know, pay off, but it's not absolutely necessary. But experience in business does help. And so being able to operate other businesses, nonprofits, and different things, having made some startups and done things, gave a little greater confidence in starting a business and taking the leap from kind of that salaried position again into the, you know, like stepping away. That was a scary time of like stepping away from my full-time job as a director of a nonprofit and saying, okay, if we're going to make this change in life, we need to make this. And, you know, it's scary. And it was difficult those first couple of years. Budgeting matters, you know, and getting things under control there. Another thing that's really helped us is, there's been a number of different consultants and you know, individuals who have just kind of poured their knowledge of business mm-hmm. into our lives. You know, so your mentors and your you know, the circle that you build around you matters. Mm-hmm. And then as we've kind of gotten into this world a little bit more, we really started collaborating a lot more with, you know, who is theoretically our competition. You know, the other homes that are out there, we have a network we call Home for Life, and it's other residential assisted living home operators here in the Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor area, and beginning to share best practices, learning from each other, even just being like a support group to each other of, you know, lamenting about our staffing woes or whatever the thing is, that's helped tremendously too.
How did that get started? And I guess, how do you feel like, I mean, initially you created a mastermind group with your competitors in town to help each other. Explain that, why that works to people who would say, well, that's a bad business idea, you know, going and helping your competitors.
It's funny. Like, there have been kind of members of our group who have really, like, when they first hear it, they're just like, they're coming from a very business standpoint, and they're like, this makes no sense. You know, it's like, I mean, I heard someone argue, like, he's like, do you see the, you know, all the car dealerships in town advertising together? No, they're advertising against each other. They're competing. And you know, so I just couldn't grasp the idea of how we could collaborate around areas of making ourselves better, including advertising, you know, telling our stories together. But I believe, so the nonprofit world helped a lot there, because in the world of nonprofits, I mean, like there are hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits in like the Fort Collins area alone, and new ones pop up every day, and it creates a lot of challenges. There's actually a lot of noise through our numbers, if that makes sense. And I think in all business, if we take a step back, I was hearing it a lot from donors who just had what's called donor fatigue, and they couldn't even, I mean, even with an incredible brand name like the American Red Cross, they could barely tell the difference between us and Salvation Army or Boys and Girls Club or, you know, United Way. It all, in people's minds, it all started kind of blending together. And certainly, you know, the less known nonprofits were really struggling in that world. And so the trend we were really watching in the nonprofit industry was mergers, you know, collaboration, working together. Donors wanted to see this. They wanted to see that we're solving community problems together. And so some of that experience kind of carried over into the world of you know, a for-profit business like this. And the idea of us collaborating wasn't unique to me. Some of the other owners had been kind of meeting together and sharing best practices loosely for a little while. And all we were doing was just kind of grabbing that same momentum and kind of formalizing it a little bit more, working on specific, rather than just meeting to talk, we wanted to start solving problems within our businesses around how, you know, how we tell our story, how we work with, you know, effectively meeting regulations within the state, how we effectively manage staff together. And doing that, it's not easy, I'll tell you that. Collaborating is hard. It takes time and coordination and effort. But I think it's a whole lot better than trying to just do business by ourselves, where we essentially are kind of noise when we're trying to tell our stories sometimes.
That's great. I love that. That's one of my favorite things about what you guys do, is that collaborative group. And I was so impressed when I first learned about it. And we just talked about this on the last episode about how so many people think the solution to effective business is to tear everybody else down around you so that you're the tallest building in the town. And I think that, you know, history has proven that generosity and supporting others and helping others, those things matter, and they really prevail. Like, authenticity and generosity seem to prevail in the business world.
It's true. And I like watching the way sometimes the problems of our business models, like what's interesting about our residential assisted living model is it is uniquely small. You know, it's small by design. And so that really affects us from an economy of scale, you know, perspective. It doesn't benefit us to grow and be the tallest building in town. So it actually makes sense to work together. So we were given a problem by the nature of our business that kind of forced us to collaborate. And it is pretty cool to watch how it's turned into a benefit for us all.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question before we end today, what would your advice be to other business owners or entrepreneurs that are either in, you know, they're in the trenches of running their own business, or that's something they see down the road in their future?
Just in general?
Yeah.
For any business? Well, I think if there's anything that's on my heart, it's one, stay disciplined to your business, stay focused. It's very easy to get, all over the place. We used to, in the world of nonprofits, we called it mission creep. So to figure out what it is that you're doing and do it well. I highly encourage working together. I think it's a necessity, particularly for small businesses. This matters. There's a book, it's something like The Little Fish in the Big Pond or something. I can't remember exactly, but it's basically telling the story of the little fish and how, swimming in the big sea, couldn't figure it out. And there's this same concept goes on throughout business, but it's basically the idea that by ourselves, it's a big world out there. And the world of business, with all the different challenges of marketing our businesses, telling our stories, financing, getting our customers, doing business in general, it's very big and challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think we should seek out unique ways to work together to solve those challenges, so we're just not a bunch of, particularly for small businesses. Otherwise, we are all. I mean, you think about the E-Myth concepts of all the different tasks that we're responsible for in our small businesses. If we find ways to share and gain economies of scale without necessarily growing into something that wasn't what we wanted to do in the first place, there's benefits there. So yeah. work together.
Absolutely, that's great. Have there been any like resources, whether it's books or podcasts or anything? You mentioned the E-Myth, but is there any books or resources that have been really helpful for you?
Well, I like Blue Ocean Strategies for sure, like E-Myth was really powerful. I'll think of some other ones, but there's a whole series on management that I love. That of course isn't on the top of my mind right now.
That's okay.
But that if there's one, that's another thing that I was taught along the way is study. Read a lot. I've liked book summaries. That's another great way of getting a lot of these concepts and pieces of knowledge into our minds, so they can help us in our businesses in a quick way. You don't have to consume a gigantic library. I love Audible books, but I guess if there's one thing I've learned is just keep studying, keep learning, keep teaching ourselves, because there is a lot we have to know in a small business.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so good. And I think that your story really is amazing, and I love that you don't just have this amazing story and then you have a business, and those are two separate things. Like, it really is integrated. And some people, you have to like dig at their why. You hear about what they do, you have to dig at their why. But like, it's so evident that you want to give back through your business. You want to help people, because whether you wanted to or not, you went through a season in your life where you had to be helped. You Yes. were dependent on others. And so I think it's just so beautiful that now you and your wife both are giving back, and you're helping other people that are in a vulnerable and dependent place. And so people need to know your story. And I think that your story gives so much credibility to what you do. And that's the purpose of our why, I would say, yes. is hopefully our why should support our what. And it's so evident that is true in your case. So thank you so much for coming and just for even being willing to share your story. I think there's too many stories out there that go unshared or untold when they really could bring a lot of impact to people. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Seth.
Yeah, absolutely. In this conversation, I honestly was getting emotional, because it's moving to see somebody who has gone through so much have such a positive outlook on life and such a desire to help and serve others. Now, I think there are so many things that we can learn from this conversation and from Aaron's story, but I really, before we go, I just want to encourage you in these two things. First off, I want to encourage you to look at your pain. Look at what you've gone through, because there's probably an opportunity to serve there. I say often that our frustrations shape our dreams, and I think our pain can shape our dreams as well. So for Aaron, it was his season of being completely dependent on others that sparked his desire to serve others in a similar way. So maybe you have gone through something in your life that you can turn around and help others in similar situations. Second, I want to encourage you to own your story. It was so powerful hearing from Aaron about how he owns what he has gone through and how it's impacted him. It was so powerful hearing him talk about with the story where he went into the grocery store and just the difference in interactions with others when he was looking at himself like a victim, kind of, you know, woe is me, life has given me a bad, you know, bad hand of cards, as opposed to walking around with confidence and recognizing that, you know, sure, things have happened to him that he didn't ask for or that have been hard, but that this is his story. And maybe you don't have physical challenges that other people see every day that you have to overcome, but in our day-to-day life, it's vital that we walk around with confidence, that we engage others, that we don't have a pity party about our life. And I believe your life will change when you can own your story and walk with confidence. I truly hope this episode has changed you and encouraged you, because it changed me and our team that was in the room while this interview was taking place. It impacted us. So please share this with somebody that you know, because they may need to hear Aaron's story. If there was somebody who, as you were hearing this story, their name came to your mind, share this episode with them. I want to know if you loved this episode. And so if this episode inspired you, send me a message on Facebook or Instagram letting me know. Seriously, do it. As always, it has been a pleasure, and I look forward to next week. My name is Seth Silvers, and this is the Small Business Storytellers.